Welcome to the Just North School of Justice podcast. This is the first podcast in a two-part series on justice theory. As global climate change is increasingly impacting every population in every corner of the earth, the Arctic comes increasingly into focus, with the Arctic climate warming at a rate of four times faster than the rest of the world, and also as an important source of critical raw materials. Discussing a variety of themes, from climate action to economic development, from political representation to access to energy, from new innovative policies to their actual implementation and feasibility, Just North podcasts try to uncover the complexities and the possible solutions in working towards a just, ethical, and sustainable transition in the Arctic. This podcast summarizes, in form of dialogues or short monologues with key experts, the main theories of the School of Justice on which Just North research builds. These theories are, in order of how you will listen to them, the capabilities approach, the liberal or libertarian justice theories, the feminist justice theory, the radical justice theories, and finally, the cosmopolitan justice theory. The Just North team of scholars who have been working with these theories of justice to apply them to studies of the Arctic are here with us to explain the meaning of these theories, how they relate to sustainable development in the region, and what are the main takeaways to remember.
I'm Steven Chudwinski.
And I'm Roman Sidorcov, and I am going to ask the first question. Steven, what is the essence of the capabilities approach?
The capabilities approach is a concept used to examine inequality and human well-being. The capabilities approach has one overarching concern. What are the legitimate freedoms that individuals hold that afford them the capability to flourish? Such a question comes from the understanding shared by capabilities approach theorists that the best way to measure real inequality is not done only by comparing the equality of given resources, such as incomes, but by comparing the opportunities that people have for themselves, which lead to human flourishing.
Steven, what are the origins of the capabilities approach?
So there's two main views that predominate within the approach. The concept was originally brought to life by Amartya Sen in the early 1980s. Sen was critical of how narrow the notion of equality was being defined within mainstream theories of justice at that time. Sen thought that these theories, most notably that of John Rawls's theory of justice as fairness, were overly focused on how to perfectly distribute resources. And because of this, Sen thought that mainstream theories of justice were missing wider measures of how to assess inequality, like human well-being, which can be taken into account, so Sen thought, by measuring what opportunities individuals have to flourish. And the other is Martha Nussbaum, who's been crucial in developing the approach. Similar to Sen, Nussbaum sees the approach as a more accurate measurement of inequality than those from within distributive theories of justice. However, Nussbaum has been more insistent upon the approach being defined as an objective political framework through which justice can be applied. So Nussbaum argues that there are objective capabilities that ought to be constitutionally protected. More so than Sen, then, Nussbaum feels that there's a universal criteria, a shared level of human well-being, by which all individuals' circumstances can be evaluated. But Roman, I know that you've worked with the capabilities approach. Can you elaborate that on the applied side?
Well, Stephen, the applied side is where the capabilities approach truly shines. The approach has been used within the academic research community, including empirical researchers, as well as intergovernmental organizations, government agencies, nonprofits, for over the last two decades. Let's start with environmental justice, and let's start with acknowledging the instrumental value of the environment for human capabilities. For example, the environment and, by extension, clean water and air and healthy ecosystems, among others, appear to be necessary conditions for Nussbaum's central capabilities, such as life, bodily health, and what she terms as other species. Let's continue with energy justice. In my work, by me, and my authors and I leaned heavily on the capabilities approach, establishing that energy is truly means and not the end in itself. We also utilize the capabilities approach to argue that energy is instrumental to developing human capabilities. However, that the energy development itself cannot interfere with provision of human capabilities. On the non-academic side, the United Nations, in their annual human development reports, adopted the concept and language of capabilities to show how disparities in basic and enhanced capabilities around the world encompass more than assessment, say, of incomes.
Right. So given the strength of the capabilities approach in applied research, what do you see as the relevance and importance of the approach for our Just North project?
The relevance that the capabilities approach offers to Just North is manifold, but let's focus on the essence. The Just North team will be able to expand upon the use of this approach when examining social and ecological inequalities within Arctic development in the past, present, and the future. The capabilities approach, as you know, is an evolving concept, and it stresses the importance of more accurately defining lived, I'm emphasizing this word, lived inequality. Therefore, the capabilities approach can make an important assessment about the nature of economic activities in the Arctic that the dominant liberal economic theories of justice underemphasize. To summarize my point, is that I see that first, the capabilities approach is a bottom-up evaluative tool that will help our researchers to focus on ends while answering the is and ought questions. Second, the capabilities approach can serve as a toolbox for other schools of justice, enabling them to be deployed strategically and perhaps more importantly, contextually.
Now, Dr. Stefan Szyblinski continues the discussion alone and elaborates for us the liberal school of justice.
Liberal theories have been central in discussions about justice, whether it has to do with how justice has been applied or whether it is a critical perspective questioning how and why justice is not realized for some. The basic tenets of liberalism, such as equality, liberty, and individualism, often reside at the core of these discussions. Liberalism prioritizes protecting individual liberties, and the primary way that this is done is by protecting the rights of individuals. All major liberal theories of justice necessitate respect for individual rights. The utilitarian theories of John Stuart Mill, or theories of social contract, such as those of Hobbes and Rousseau, both recognize rights as central to realizing a just society. The most well-known theory of liberal justice was articulated by John Rawls in his 1971 book, A Theory of Justice. Rawls's theory was significant because it re-engaged political philosophy in conversations about what is just and equitable within an advanced state of welfare capitalism. So Rawls's theory prioritized a right to liberty before that of an equitable distribution of primary goods, such as income or political opportunities. Many liberal theories working through Rawls's ideas have since debated what a just distribution of these types of goods might look like. But how we come to define a just distribution and equality more generally is an ongoing matter of dispute within discussions of justice. Because liberalism assumes to be universal, that is, the idea that citizens are equal in their rights, many liberal theories have been critical of who or what is excluded within liberalism. For example, feminist and egalitarian theories of justice have exposed the weaknesses of the liberal tendency toward reinforcing normative family structures or having a blindness toward social differences, in addition to how economic distributions are inadequately addressed in liberal democracies and welfare capitalism. These debates around the protection of individual and corporate rights and responsibilities are particularly useful when addressing matters of development within the Arctic. With uneven effects of climate change impacting some cultural and economic groups more than others, and as economic distribution within and between nation states becomes more disparate, theories of liberal justice must still address how, despite having equal rights, particular groups continue to experience injustices despite policies and protections being in place. The strength of liberal theories of justice will always be rooted in its respect for rights. A focus for the Just North Project, therefore, is to address where and in what ways injustice persists and how those inequities can be accounted for with socioeconomic and ecological sensitivity.
Now we've seen liberal justice theory, but what about libertarian justice, which has also its foundation in individual liberty? Dr. Corinne Wood Donnelly of Uppsala University, Sweden, and associate professor at Nord University, Norway, now explains the libertarian justice theory.
Of the many established traditions and approaches to justice that we have been exploring, libertarian justice is perhaps one of the more underrated and less prolific approaches. Most of the existing literature of libertarian justice is implicitly libertarian, from thinkers such as Henry David Thoreau, Ayn Rand, or Robert Nozick. While there is some applied literature which builds on theorists who have been labeled as libertarian, though they may not have used the term themselves, there exists little discussion of the what is libertarian justice. The purpose of this podcast is to introduce the dominant themes emerging from libertarian thought that can be construed as a libertarian justice. It will also include a description of the spectrum of libertarian justice and its potential application to the Arctic. A libertarian theory of justice, so-called, must be a system of justice that is based in the ideals of libertarianism. In this regard, the moral basis for libertarian justice is based on natural rights, with an emphasis on negative rights, including the right to be free from coercion, force, and the effects of power. These rights are embedded in the individual person rather than in society. Societal or collective rights must always be reducible to the right of the individual. The liberty in a libertarian justice is not, however, without bounds. Those liberties only extend until they bump up against another individual's liberty. The liberty of one individual does not include the liberty to violate the liberty of another. This constraint places a moral responsibility in the individual to refrain from actions that violate liberty. In a libertarian justice, property rights emerge in the ownership thesis. And while few libertarians would disagree on the notion of individual sovereignty, differences appear in the agreement to what kinds of property this ownership extends, such as the produce of one's labor, natural resources, or land, and to what extent government authority can interfere in ownership through taxation. Libertarian thought is a strand of political thinking most commonly associated with economic conservatism and is largely associated with far right of American political conservatism. While at the same time libertarian thought features ideals such as the emphasis on individual liberty and the repression of state authority, which are more commonly associated with the radical or even anarchist left. The result of this broad range of features, which at times are seen in other conceptions of the good, is that it is difficult to place libertarian justice on a left-right spectrum in comparison to other conceptions of justice. What we can do, however, is to develop an internal spectrum for libertarian justice divided between left libertarianism on one side and right libertarianism on the other. In doing so, it is possible to differentiate between the different strands of libertarian thought based on their perspectives of certain key features, such as the handling of private property, the role of the state, or taxation. In this regard, on the left of left libertarianism, we find geo-libertarianism, which promotes the absence of private property in lieu of property in common. From there, we travel through individualist anarchism and libertarian socialism before we reach the right side of the libertarian spectrum, where we find libertarian capitalism and anarcho-capitalism, before reaching the far right of conservative libertarianism, which promotes the laissez-faire economy and strong defense of private property. Libertarian justice can be interesting, though perhaps controversial, if applied to issues in the Arctic and the injustices found in economic development in the potential transition to sustainable development. This can include the notion of just acquisition and proprietary theory in thinking on the exploitation rights of Arctic lands and raw resources, and the inequalities of core periphery distribution of benefits and costs of development, such as environmental risks or operational profits, and even the application of Nozick's entitlement thesis to land ownership.
Dr. Johanna Holsten from the Institute of Russian and Eurasian Studies of Uppsala University will now delve more into radical justice theorizations, explaining what these are and their relevance to Just North research.
Radical accounts of justice do not make up a coherent normative tradition of justice, but are rather a set of positions on justice, taking their starting point in perceptions of injustices. These positions have one thing in common. They are all critical towards what are generally considered to be mainstream theories of justice. And while there is no one definitive mainstream theory of justice, the predominant understanding of justice is commonly based in philosophical liberalism. But what could be understood as radical justice then? Well, in fact, there are several different traditions and schools which are located all over the political spectra. And radical understandings of justice could, for example, be found in such diverging accounts as Marxist thinking, post-colonial theory, as well as right-wing radicalism and fascism. However, what seems to be the most common understanding of radical justice is primarily connected to Marxism. And although Karl Marx himself did not offer a conceptualization of justice, the majority of his works have clear connotations and implications for theories of justice. For example, Marx argued that human emancipation is essential for people to be free from exploitation and domination. Emancipation is commonly understood as freedom to not be oppressed by powerful entities. Within the Marxist tradition, scholars seek to provide alternatives to mainstream theories of justice, for they argue that such accounts do not adequately address how power and domination undergird principles of justice. Crucial questions are, for example, what power and domination is and entails, and what it means to be free from domination. So what makes power and domination important for critiques of justice? While Marxian critiques highlight unequal power relations and pinpoint those social aspects which reproduce an unequal relationships among people and between people and other species. Another tradition which could be positioned within a framework of radical justice is post-colonial theory. Scholars in this tradition also focus on power by focusing on liberation from domination and exploitation. And this is positioned in a radical tradition given that most mainstream thinking failed to include the other, which is one of the most important contributions of post-colonial scholarship. Post-colonial theorists have questioned the who, or the subject of justice, as well as argue that mainstream theories of justice often are too Western, white, and male-dominated. By addressing and reassessing privileged positions based on, for example, gender or ethnicity, post-colonial theory offers clear connections to, for example, feminist thinking. The relevance of radical justice theorizations for Just North is primarily that it helps us rethink the conception of justice. It allows us to assess the weakness of mainstream liberalism. Radical theories adopt a critical lens to ask who is affected by current social practices and institutions, and how. It also provides alternative concepts and conceptualizations of central value for the analyses conducted within this research project, primarily those of power, domination, and critique, which, amongst others, are crucial for transformation towards sustainability and justice in the Arctic.
In the next part of this podcast, Don Mitchell, professor at the Department of Social Economic Geography of Uppsala University, discusses feminist school of justice.
It can be helpful to think of feminist philosophies of justice as progressing through three overlapping steps. Cumulatively, these three steps have forced a radical reconceptualization of the who, what, where, when, and how of justice. The first step is centered on women's demands to be treated as full and equal persons in society, in politics, in the family, in the economy, and before the law. The second step has entailed turning the focus of justice theorizing from the individual to the group, and with this, a reconsideration of the modes of oppression and domination that create conditions of injustice. The third step is the ongoing development of appropriately sophisticated theories of global gender justice in a world defined by uneven global economic development, asymmetrical geopolitical relations, and ongoing environmental crises. Feminist theories of justice reject the severe individualism of much liberal theorizing. They understand the who, that is, the subject of justice, not to be individuals as such, but to be individuals who are indivisible from the groups of which they are a sometimes contentious part, and thus deserving of rights and just treatment. Feminists argue that it is insufficient to any longer consider the what, or the object of justice, to primarily be redistribution of goods, opportunities, or positions. The object of justice must also incorporate recognition, and with it respect for difference, and representation in the sense of being afforded a valued and listened to voice. The where, or the domain of justice in feminism, is not merely the courts or the state or public and private institutions, but also include the family, however configured, and the systems of social reproduction, including the distribution of unpaid work and care within which we are embedded. Feminist theorists understand the social circumstances, or the when of justice, to not be limited to some original moment when institutions and distributions are designed, or to debates in legislatures or judges' chambers, or even to the heat of gender, race, class, or other struggle, but to be always already present in our everyday lives and within the quotidian social connections that living in a complex, globalized world creates. Finally, feminist research shows that the question of how justice should be enacted, that is, the principles of justice, require a considerable reconsideration of the structures of power that guide political intervention, as well as the invention of new modes of solidarity. The relevance of feminist theorizing to Just North is obvious and really quite simple. We live in a world defined by and continually reinforcing what the South African justice theorist Rowan Connell calls the patriarchal dividend. This dividend, as she notes, extends well beyond economic matters. Any development in the Arctic, no matter how economically or ecologically sustainable, that affirms or deepens this dividend by exacerbating unjust family relations, further marginalizing groups, imperiling culturally valued systems of social reproduction, or transferring wealth to the masculinist centers of power, that is, any development that does not seek to transform the relations that produce this dividend, will necessarily be unjust.
Tracy Skillington, Director of the Bachelor in Sociology and a lecturer at the Department of Sociology and Criminology at the University College Cork, ends this podcast by discussing theories of cosmopolitan school of justice and bringing the concept of justice to the global level.
The key features of a cosmopolitan approach to justice include 1. A principle of respect for the moral, ethical and legal status of the individual. 2. A structural limitation of state power through mechanisms such as multi-level political representation and rights protection. 3. A commitment to inclusivity, transnational solidarity and international perpetual peace, all bound by duties to enter into civil agreements governed by a social contract, one that protects fundamental freedoms and limits the potential for harm. 4. A principle of openness to new worldviews, also expressed through the idea of hospitality. The ideas associated with the cosmopolitan tradition have a long and varied history of development, from the writings of early Stoics and the Cynics, whose ideas on the moral limits of war and the duties of civil society are noted as having a strong impact on Roman social and political life, and in the shaping of the Republic, to Kant's reflections on war, revolution, and the expansion of colonial empires in the 18th century, to philosophical reflections in the post-World War II period on the founding of a European Union of Peoples and the need for Europe states traumatised by the violence of war and totalitarianism to surrender part of their political sovereignty to a higher legal authority in the interest of what Hannah Arendt referred to as a good peace, and establish a union founded in legal terms, first and foremost by a community of peoples and only secondarily by a community of states. Today, Europe continues to reconsider the value of, and indeed the challenges posed to, its cosmopolitan heritage when addressing a range of newer concerns, such as those arising in relation to the Arctic, and the need to preserve this world region as a zone of peace, sustainable development, democratic governance and international cooperation. Similarly, in relation to the issue of biodiversity, its new biodiversity strategy seeks to align cosmopolitan commitments to principles of respect, diversity and hospitality with respect for nature, genetic diversity, and protecting the freedoms of migratory species to movement and to hospitality, as much as those of human populations.
Thank you for having listened to this Just Not podcast. If you're interested in learning more about schools of justice and justice theories, check out our other podcast on the applied schools of justice. You can also learn more about the Just North project and its ambitions at www.justnorth.eu or follow us at justnorth.eu on social media channels, including Instagram or Twitter. Just North has been funded under the EU Horizon 2020 Climate Action Programme with Grant Agreement 869327. If you're wanting to learn more about justice theory, the team has also published an edited volume that includes more detail about the theories that we have discussed today. The book is called Theorizing Justice, a Primer for Social Scientists. It's published with Bristol University Press in September 2023 in the Spaces and Practices of Justice series.